Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome the leadership guy on Inc.com, Peter Economy. Now, Peter has worked very closely with some of the nation's top business, leadership, and technology thinkers, and he is a best-selling business author, ghostwriter, developmental editor, and a publishing consultant with more than 100 books to his credit. One of those books we're going to be talking about today, it's on my desk, and thank you for sending that, Peter. And that book is called Wait, I'm the Boss, The Essential Guide for New Managers to Succeed from Day One. Now, Peter is a graduate of Stanford University with majors in economics and human biology, and he has worked very closely with some of the most important people that you're ever going to hear of, but I don't have time to list them here. So look for the show notes and you'll find out who these people are. Peter, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Denise. It's great to be here today.
Listen, thank you for sending your book. I love it. It's on my desk, and I have been poking my nose in it for a couple of weeks now. And before we get started, I would like for you to tell people why you wrote this book. And I have to say, with everything that's going on right now with COVID-19 and people working from home and bosses having to go, oh, geez, this is not what I was trained for, I think I'm going to pivot a little bit from the questions that I had for you earlier, and we'll try to work them in. But for right now, I think this is a more important topic. So if you would tell people a bit more about yourself, and then let's just do what we can to help out.
Sure, yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, what's going on today is unprecedented. And, I mean, we've been through crises before. This is not the first time we've been in a crisis, but this one is really different than anything that's been in my lifetime, that's for sure. But, you know, the book that I wrote, you know, Wait, I'm the Boss, is really particularly, I think, relevant today, because there's so many people who are new managers. This is a book basically for someone who's a new manager, to give the new manager pretty much anything that they need to know to be a really good manager, to be a great manager, the tools and the different kinds of things you need to know. So, I mean, what I found through my research is that, and the reason I wrote the book is because, you know, the number one reason, according to Gallup, that people quit their jobs is because of their boss. So there's a lot of bad bosses out there, and there's a lot of people quitting their jobs. So anything we can do to help companies keep good people, which, you know, particularly, well, it's important all the time to keep good people, but now you really need to keep your good people and not lose them.
And I think I read somewhere in there, excuse me, I'm losing my voice today. I have no idea why. I think it's the weather changes. It's crazy over here right now. Hang on. I don't want to cough on you. I think I read that a lot of people, some people, would rather quit, you know, than have to stay with the same boss, even if you offered them a raise. I have to tell you, I would be one of those people. I have done so. You know, I've rarely worked in other people's companies, but on those occasions where I did, it wasn't fun. It really wasn't. Yeah. I have yet to meet a good boss. And that's sad, which is why I'm my own boss.
It is sad, and there's you know, there's no reason for it. I think the reason that, you know, I was a manager for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I've been a full-time writer for the last 20 years or so, but maybe for the first 10 years of my career, I was a manager. And I was never trained in being a manager, and most companies don't train people to be managers. They just sort of throw them in there and say, well, swim, sink or swim. And unfortunately, a lot of people end up sinking. And the only example, the only training they have is to look at their manager and try to copy what their manager does. And if they've got a bad manager, then they're copying bad habits. They're learning bad habits without knowing what really the right things to do.
And let me ask you this. If you were working with a workforce who has been under this bad manager, they're already kind of trained. So they're probably going to push back if you try to make any changes, won't they? Even if it is better for them?
Yeah, it's hard when you've got a group of people that are ingrained, who've developed a set of habits. We know how hard it is to change habits. Once you've got a habit, it's really hard to change. And if you've got no real motivation to do so, if you're kind of skating by or you're getting by with these bad habits, then why should you change? There's not much reason to do that.
That's exactly, and I'm not sure I've ever seen that happen, but it just seems to me that, people kind of get in their little rut, and you come along, and you're trying to be a good manager, and you want to make things change, and they're like, no, unless you talk them into it. So how do you talk them into it?
Right.
I guess that's one of the big questions too. But that, honestly, I'm thinking we may have to do a second interview because there's so much I want to talk to you about, the book when, things get back to whatever normal
Right,
is. But
back to normal,
let's talk about,
right?
yeah, let's talk about the new normal for right now because so many people are working remotely. And I'm just guessing from what I'm reading and hearing from other clients that they've got the technology sorted out or mostly sorted out. But now they're all, and the word I'm hearing a lot is culture shock. Big, big culture shock for a lot of these people. For so many reasons. So what are you seeing, and how can you kind of help people navigate their way through this?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it, I think culture is a big part of it, culture shock, because here, you go to a company, you go into work every day, and there's a certain culture there. There's a certain way of doing things, there's certain expectations of how you behave and perform. And all of a sudden, you send all these people home, and you don't have that, culture anymore. The culture has been kind of just distributed and maybe destroyed. Because people aren't together anymore. So one of the things you've really got to try to do as a manager and anybody in a business, and this is from the, smallest mom and pop to the largest businesses, is to pull that culture together, to still keep that culture happening. And I think, what that's all about is communicating. I think managers more than ever in a situation like this have to, build all kinds of avenues for communication with their people. You've got to find ways to pull people together, keep your team together. So obviously people are doing Zoom meetings, Skype meetings, these different kinds of, video conferencing meetings. And you've got to keep a regular schedule of those kinds of meetings and, try to keep that culture, intact as best you can, even though now your employees are all scattered across town.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Oh,
Can you
I
hear me?
lost you. Yeah, I lost. I heard across town, and then you just went silent.
And that's yeah. That's what I ended with was, when you've
Oh, okay.
got people scattered across town, then you basically your culture has been fragmented, and you've got to do your best as a leader, as a manager, to keep it together.
Exactly. And, listen, there are some very funny memes and, posts all over social media about people having to work, and because it's new for them too. I mean, I work from home. It's nothing new to me, but, people are, what do I do with my kids? The dog is barking. My husband won't
Right.
cook dinner. What am I going to do? And some of these
Right.
memes are absolutely hysterical, but some of them are just, you just kind of clutch your stomach and go, oh my gosh, it's culture shock at home, it's culture shock in the workplace. I'm thinking managers are saying, now what do I do? How do I help these people? How do I really stay in touch with them but still remain the boss? And I'm thinking, because I'm seeing a lot of it, some bosses are just like, I don't know what to do, I don't know what the next step is, and they're running around clutching their heads. So let's talk about them. What can they specifically do? Staying in touch is mandatory, I think. But you know what I'm also noticing that some people are oversharers. They're like, oh, well, I'm here, I'm on Zoom. Where's everybody else? And I'm thinking schedules are a good thing too. So what are you seeing? What do you recommend?
Right. Well, I think the key word you just said there was schedule. And just because you're at home and the kids are around, I mean, this is something I've had to deal with, working from home myself in the last 20 years. I've been working from home. Is that you have to set schedules regardless. If there are kids around, dinners needs to be cooked, all those kinds of things. You still have to have schedules. And you have to be able to pull your team together at certain times. So I think it's an odd situation for a manager to be in, because on one hand you still need to be, you have to have, allow for some flexibility here. I mean, again, this is unprecedented times, and we are kind of all thrown together at home. If you've got a kindergartner and a third grader all of a sudden at home, and they were gone all day before, and now they're at home, and you've got to deal with that, and dogs and cats and animals running around and who knows what else, you know, you've got to allow some flexibility as a manager for your people, but you've still got to, you know, provide structure. And I think that's more important maybe than ever, is for managers to provide structure for their people and for their organization. You know, you've got to set standards. You've got to have goals. You've got to, you know, you've got to provide that structure that people need to work and to do the best job they can. So schedules are super important. Regular meetings, you know, scheduling a regular meeting with your team, scheduling regular one-on-ones with each person on your team. Just to touch base, and you can have some flexibility in those schedules, but I think having a weekly team meeting at minimum, and then weekly one-on-ones with all of your people, each of your people, is at minimum is necessary for sure.
Oh, definitely. Let me ask you this. A lot of people, and this is just me thinking out loud, I'm thinking a lot of people might be better served if their job allowed it or their position allowed it to work in the evenings. Either very early in the morning before their family wakes up. And you know, I saw a photo the other day that I thought was really cute. This woman was sitting at a counter. Obviously, it was a breakfast bar. And she was sitting there with this kind of droll look on her face in front of her laptop. And directly behind her was her dining room. And you could see her little boy. He looked like he was maybe 4 years old, dressed up in his complete Spider-Man outfit. I mean, he had the mask on. He had everything on. And he's crouched on the table. And he's saying, "Can you hear me breathe now?" And I lost it. I thought, okay. Yeah. I mean, you could tell she was ready to strangle him, and he didn't understand, but he was trying to stay out of the way. So
right.
That, like,
sure.
You know, that picture kind of stuck in my head. And I'm wondering if some people, if managers could or would be willing to kind of split their time with something. You know, maybe some teams can work at night if that works better for them. Let's say, you know, after dinner till 11 or something, I don't know, you know, depending on what their tasks are, or maybe very early in the morning. Would that even work to kind of figure out where your people are the most productive instead of saying, okay, we're doing 9-to-5 people, deal with it? I don't think that's going to work, but that's just me personally.
Well, no, I think you've really hit the nail on the head. I think that's great. I think as a manager, you know, again, you've got this kind of two sides of the coin. On one hand, you want to allow flexibility as much as you can, but then on the other hand, you still need to have a certain amount of structure where, you know, people can all pull together and be aligned and get their things done together. So I think that's great, because I mean, I find myself most productive from about 10 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning personally, because I'm not distracted by my emails, I'm not distracted by people calling me, I don't have, you know, Amazon knocking on my door. I don't, you know, there's a million different reasons. My dog is asleep. My cat's asleep. All those different things. My wife's asleep. So I get a lot more done. And I think that, you know, as a manager, if you allow that flexibility, you just tell your team, you guys figure it out. You know, you can allow them to figure out when they want to work, when it's best for them. But then still provide that structure where you say, okay, we're still going to have a weekly team meeting, you know, on Zooms, for example, where we all get together at, say, 2 o'clock every Friday afternoon or 9 a.m. every Monday morning to check in and just see what we're going to do this next week. You know, let's check in and see what everybody's going to do. And then allow your people and encourage your people to, among themselves, decide for themselves when they want to work together. If they want to, you know, break apart the team and have their own little meetings any time of the day or night. It could be, like you said, 10 o'clock at night. Maybe a little group of people decide they want to get together at 10 o'clock on Zoom just to go through what they do. So I think that's a really great idea to, you know, enable your people, empower them to, you know, set their own schedules to find the times that work best for them. And then to, but still provide that structure where you have your own regular Zoom team meeting, say every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, and then maybe a check-in meeting Friday afternoons just to kind of touch base before the weekend.
Exactly. And I think a lot of managers are going to find that once they allow that flexibility and they let people work to their own rhythms, I'm like you, I work very early in the morning. And then again, about 7 o'clock at night, I'm like, ooh, and back I go. And I may work until 11 o'clock at night. That's when my body says, hey, I'm ready. Let's go. My brain's functioning. And I live alone. I work alone. I'm an introvert. But I've figured out that those are my rhythms, very early and kind of late at night. Around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, don't talk to me unless it's really critical. It's not a good idea. I'm crabby. But yeah, I think that people will find that once they let people or, encourage people maybe is the better term to say, listen, you work out what's work best for you because we want you at full productivity, whatever that looks like to you and however that looks like to the team, and let's make it work. You don't have to be here from 8 a.m. and I'm going to be jiggling my keys behind your desk looking over your shoulder. We need to make this work and tell us how to work. And I'm sure there'll be a few stumbles, but once everybody starts pulling together, I bet you have a much more productive team, agency, group, whatever you want to call it. It could be difficult, though, starting out. It could be a little dicey, but I think once you get it worked out, you're gold.
I agree. I think you're right on target here because it's a two-part thing. Giving people, empowering people to do what needs to be done and figuring it out for themselves with your support. Obviously you're going to support your people, and if they need help, provide that help and support. Because people will do better. They'll give more of themselves. They'll be more engaged. They'll be more productive when they feel they have control over their own job and you're not jiggling the keys, behind their desk at 8 a.m., checking in on them, constantly micromanaging them. And this is, I think it's interesting because, if there's any silver lining to this whole, COVID virus thing that we're going through right now, it's that I think a lot of companies and organizations are going to start thinking about maybe this is something we should do more often instead of having people in offices, making people come to an office. Why not let them work at home? And this has been something that has been talked about for a long time. And a lot of companies have resisted it. A lot of managers have resisted, letting people work at home. But I think now through this example, being forced to, a lot of companies may just decide they want to let their people keep working at home and maybe get rid of some of this office space that they're paying all this money for and all that.
Exactly. And we're seeing the same thing I was talking to you in my virtual green room a bit ago. Schools are kind of talking about the same thing. It's like we've got these massive buildings. They're only open 9 months a year. This is working pretty good with the distance learning. We may need to look at this. So things are going to change. We're never going to go back to what it was, but we can certainly pivot and do better.
Definitely. I think that throughout our society, we're going to be looking at things now through a different lens, whether it's in business. Obviously, when you've got a small business, you've got a pizza joint down the street there or a little 7-Eleven or something, convenience store, whatever it may be, a small, small business like that, you're still going to have some sort of restaurant space or office space or, retail space. But for a lot of companies where it's more, people using their brains and more people, doing that kind of thing, you don't need all that office space. You don't need people to come into the office necessarily. As long as you provide that structure, as long as you have goals, as long as you have, performance standards, things that they're supposed to do, and people know what they're supposed to do, and you can measure that, why not let people work at home? And why not allow children to do some of their learning at home instead of in a big building that you have to pay for and maintain? Definitely.
Exactly. And they get to spend time as families, which I think is a terrific thing. So there are going to we're seeing a lot of changes happen in a very short time, and I think that's going to continue. It's not a bad thing. A pandemic is not a good thing. There's no whitewashing that. But some of the things that could and are coming out of it, I think, are pretty remarkable. People really are pulling together. you know, they're finding ways to help one another. They're finding ways to continue with their business, keep their doors open, even if they're virtual doors at this point. So, and I like what you said about, you know, making sure that there are standards and you're tracking them. And let's talk about what the new manager needs to do for that, because this poor new manager who's coming into this right now, he's going to be kind of jumping into a fireball, isn't he? Or
right,
she.
Yeah. That's for sure. I mean, can you imagine becoming a new manager right now and being in charge of a team of 10 people or 100 people or however many people it is? I mean, what a tough situation that would be for a new manager. So it's more important than ever for that new manager to know what to do, to learn what to do. And if their company doesn't teach them what to do, then they've got to figure it out some other way. That's for sure.
Well, and this is a good time for them to really teach themselves well, instead of picking up old,
right.
You know, like you said earlier, you're picking up the habits of the last management, because you've walked into that culture. It's already established. You're just, you know, the new guy that nobody likes. So now what do you do?
Right.
But this is different. Now you can say, listen, I'm watching, I'm learning, I'm self-educating, I'm listening to all of you. I want to know, you know, what are your strengths? What are your characters? How can I help you? But if you step out of line, I am going to smack you, just so you know. I mean, you can't be a weenie here. But to me, it seems like this, if you've got the right kind of mindset, this might be a terrific opportunity for new managers to really create something that works well, or they can fall apart. So let's help them not fall apart.
Exactly, and that's what this book is all about, is helping a new manager not fall apart, because, again, most organizations throw them into the deep end of the pool and say, okay, you know, you can sink or swim. We want you to swim, but if you sink, then I guess that's the way it goes. And, you know, why not, you know, set up your new managers for success? You know, if they're successful, then your people will be successful, your organization will be successful. So why not do that?
So what can new managers, let's just stick with the new manager who has been thrown into this position, says, oh, geez, I had a corner office for about a minute and a half. Now I'm at home on my breakfast bar. What do I do? So let's talk about mindset. I think their mindset might be a great starting point, because, you know, they're worried, scared, and gone, oh, man, what do I do now? So how can you help them with that?
Yeah, well, I think there's, you know, really four areas of mindset that a manager, whether they're new or well-established, you know, veteran manager, needs to keep in mind, you know, to keep the right kind of leadership mindset that's going to really get the best out of their people and perform best for the organization. And, you know, the first mindset, I think, is in a mindset of empowerment, of empowering your people. And this is what we're talking about, especially now, when people are working from home, is enabling your people, encouraging your people to, you know, do things on their own, to get things done themselves, to work with each other and to work things out. So instead of you micromanaging them and you know, basically ordering them around all the time, you want them to empower themselves and to get things done themselves and to make decisions and get engaged and do things on their own and with their team members. So set them up in that way. You know, delegate, you know, part of empowerment is delegating authority to people. So, and delegating tasks to them instead of trying to do everything yourself. And I think managers err in trying to do everything themselves. I think I know I did when I was a manager, that a lot of times I'd look at a task, I'd say, oh, I've got to get this report done for my boss. Maybe I'll just do it myself, because I know I'll get it done a lot faster and probably more accurately if I just do it myself instead of giving it to one of my employees to do. And I think, you know, empowering people means going ahead and delegating authority and delegating tasks to them so that they learn how to do it. And you don't have to do everything. You know, that's certainly one big mindset change for a lot of managers, is just letting go a bit and not trying to do everything yourself.
You know, I did the same thing when I started my business. My team is all remote. Everything I do is virtual, thank goodness. So So this is nothing new to me, but what I had to learn the hard way, because let me back up a bit. I don't ask my team members to do anything that I can't personally do myself, because I need to understand, I'm a very technical business. I need to understand what I'm asking them. I need to be able to write the brief, if you will. I need them to understand what it is that I'm talking about. But I found out a long time ago, if I try to do all this work myself, I burn out. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I might go get a job. I'm worn out. But what I found out once I started getting rid of that tendency to just do it myself because I could and it was quick and it was easy, and it wasn't. At 11 o'clock at night, I still hadn't done my primary work. I was too busy doing all the little stuff. But what I found out, which was so interesting, was that when I said, okay, I'm going to hand this to you. Do you have a better way of doing this? Because these are all smart people. I hire people that are actually better at doing some things than I am. It just makes sense. And they'll say, well, yeah, did you think about this? No, I didn't. Let's talk about that. And we will come up between us, instead of me doing it my way, which was perfectly good, they'll come up with a shorter, quicker, more efficient way to do it. And I'm like, okay. So my suggestion is ask for their expertise. Ask for their advice, because we've all got it. I mean, we all have ideas, right?
We do, and I think that's what you said there is really, really important, is that you hire people who are maybe better than you are. I mean, people who know more than you do in certain areas. I mean, I think that's, I always thought when I was a manager that I was always looking for people who knew things I didn't know. You know, it would kind of fill in the gaps in an organization. You try to find, you're trying to cover all these different tasks, all these different things that need to be done, and you want to find experts in each of those areas, people who are really knowledgeable, people who are have expertise in those areas, and they may be better than you are, and that's great. That's really that's a great thing to have, is people who are, who are smart and can do things you can't do necessarily. So and then give them, like I said, give them the authority, give them the tasks, and let them run with them. And you're right, they're going to probably come up with ideas that may be better ideas than what you've got. That's great. That's a great organization you've got there when you've got people that can go off and do that.
Well, don't ask me how long it took me to figure that out, because I'd have to lie to you. It was way too long. It was embarrassingly too long.
Wow.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, so keep going. I'm sorry.
No, and then I was going to say another mindset thing, I think, is definitely energizing your people. So I think the best managers and the best leaders, I think, leaders, think about a leader that you really respect, you really like working for. That person probably inspires you. That person is an inspiration, makes you get excited about your job, makes you feel like what you're doing is important. And I think, part of this, mindset is just energizing your people and inspiring your people and setting up a workplace that they're excited to come to. You don't want people who they wake up in the morning and they go, oh, geez, I got to go to work. Oh, that's the last thing I want to do is go to work. I've got to drive into the office and go there again. You want people who are excited about it, excited to go into the office and to get to work, to do the things that need to be done, and that they feel like they're really making a difference for their customers, for their communities, and for the world at large. I think that's really another key mindset for any leader, any manager to definitely embrace.
And this doesn't mean you're floating balloons in the office. You're actually saying thank you and meaning it. You're actually asking for input, and sometimes you can use it, sometimes you can't, but they're part of the team. And I think that's where, you can be a cashier at a Dollar Tree, you're still part of a team. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. If you're in a room with people or a building with people or on Zoom with people, you're part of a team, right?
Exactly. And I think it's interesting. I think, I remember, I don't know if they still do it. I assume they do, but I remember there used to be the Walmart cheer, I think it is, that the team would get, every shift, there'd be a new shift, and they'd get the team together real quick on a new shift, I guess before the store opened or something like that. And the manager would just go through a few things real quick. Here's what's going on. Here's a couple of things you need to know. And then they'd do a cheer. They'd do like, I think it was a Walmart cheer, and they would just literally have a little cheer just to get people kind of engaged and excited about the day ahead. So, yeah, maybe you're not going to do a cheer, but you can certainly get people excited about where they work instead of, you know, sad about the fact that they've got to go to work.
Exactly. Have you ever seen Amy Cuddy's TED Talk where she's talking about body language?
I have, yeah.
It's one of the top three. I love that. And
yeah.
I do this every time I get on a podcast. I did it before I jumped on with you. I stand up, I do my Wonder Woman pose, I take a deep breath, and off I go.
Exactly.
Fun. It gets oxygen into my lungs. I'm laughing at myself or, you know, giggling a little bit, and I'm ready to kick butt. So yeah, it can be
exactly.
Something that small, but yeah, something, yeah.
Yeah, that Wonder Woman, the Superman, whatever pose. I know it's that sort of superhero type pose that she talks about, and it's true. I mean, I think if you know everything that we do, our mind has such a great effect on the things that we do. I mean, our mind is everything, and attitude is everything. I think, you know, this is so true in business and in life, that the attitude you carry with you just flows through to everyone around you. And if you've got a bad attitude, if you're sour, you know, if you're not happy, that's going to pervade your organization. It's going to get into your people. It's going to get into your organization too. But if you're positive, if you're, you know, if you look forward to the day ahead, if you're excited for your customers, you know, helping your customers, that's going to pervade your people too. And they're going to get excited and they're going to be happy and they're going to want to do well for their customers too, which is, you know, another mindset thing. It's all mindset. It's all having a positive influence over your people and your organization.
Exactly. So are there any more mindsets that you want to share with us? Because I have a question about HR after that.
Okay. Well, I think the last thing I'd mention as far as mindsets is just a mindset of communication, of being open and communicating widely. And I think in a situation like today where, you know, you've got a crisis and you've got, you know, many people who are trying to get things done remotely, that you've got to communicate. You've got to maybe err on over-communication because, you know, people need to know what's going on. It's particularly important to communicate. So it's a mindset of being a communicator, not holding things in, but, you know, being open and honest and transparent and over-communicate, if anything.
Yeah, for a while anyway. And I would think that at this point, you know, new managers and even the team, they're going to be working some very strange hours that they never thought that they signed on for, but just getting the technology done, getting everything at home kind of sorted out. You know, people are going to be running around going, okay, I have this to-do list, oh my gosh. And, you know, but just start with one, fix that, go with the second one. But I think once things calm down a bit and they decide, okay, we're going to keep doing this, this is working, we're more productive than ever, then you can cut back a bit on the communication, but retain that structure. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all, again, structure and giving people expectations of how things are going to be. And again, in a remote situation, when you've got this kind of situation we're in today, people need that structure more than ever. And they need to know what they can expect and when they can expect it. So I think you're exactly right.
It is important. It's important for the team. It's important for the people they're serving. It's, you know, whether you're an insurance agency and you're working remotely, you need to make sure that your, you know, people who are buying insurance from you know exactly what they need to go do. Can they come to the office? Do they have to call? You know, what's going on? So communicate everywhere you can. So that leads me to a question about, you know, human resources, HR, because what you said about, you know, somebody who's like, oh, I don't want to be here, you know, and you've got this guy, he's slumped in his chair, he doesn't really want to be there, he's not showing up to Zoom on time, whatever, he's just not there. And what do you do now? Is this going to impact HR, how we actually fire bad employees when they're not right there in the building? I'm wondering how this is going to restructure HR.
Yeah. Well, HR is going to continue to exist, even if they're remote, but they're still going to be there. And you've still got to hold your employees to standards. I mean, even though I think maybe a little bit more empathy and flexibility is necessary today, especially on the front end of things, as people try to figure out how they're going to work in their home with children and spouses and dogs and cats and whatever else happening that's happening, you know, in a home environment that they're not used to. I think you need a little bit more flexibility and understanding, but you still need to hold people to standards. And if they're not able to get on the meeting call, if they're not doing the work, if they're not performing, you still have to deal with that. It's necessary, not just for, you know, you as a manager to do that, but it's really for them to learn what's necessary to do their job, and also for their coworkers to know that you're holding everyone to the same standard. I think one of the biggest mistakes that managers make is allowing maybe one employee to kind of skate along. So allowing that one employee not to have to show up to the Zoom meeting. Everybody else is there, but why, you know, that one employee just can't seem to make it for some reason. And why are you letting that employee get by with that when the other employees are all there on time and contributing?
Yep.
So why would you as a manager let that one person get by with that without calling them out on it? So it's critically important as a manager, whether you're new or you know, veteran, well-established manager, to hold everyone to the same standard, to make sure that you hold them accountable. And then if they need to be disciplined through the HR process, you know, if you need to call HR and let them know you've got a problem employee that you need to discipline, go ahead and do that. You know, just it's there's no difference there than, you know, any other time. You've still got to hold your employees to standards, get HR involved, and you may have to fire someone still. And this is a terrible time to fire someone. It never is a good time, I'll be honest about that. I mean, it's never a good time to be fired. No one wants to be fired. I don't think anybody wants to be fired, but it's a really traumatic thing to go through. But you can't just allow an employee who's underperforming, who's not doing what they're supposed to do, to continue to do that and expect that to be a good thing. It won't be a good thing.
No, and my way of thinking is that it would drag the rest of them down, obviously. On the rare occasions where I've worked in somebody else's office, there was always, without fail, that one person that showed up 15 minutes later, you know, late. Might be a female, might be a male, but they didn't even bother to make an excuse. They would just breeze in and plunk down whatever they wanted on their desk and go about their business, and the rest of us would be saying, well, we had to be here on time. What's the deal with you? And it really did cause some low-level unease, you know, and anger, to be honest. So, you're right. Nobody wants to fire anybody right now, but you know what they say about apples and barrels. You better clean that up right now, I would think.
Yeah, and I think it's harder for managers to see what's going on. I mean, when everybody's together in the office, it's easier to see if an employee is wandering in late every day.
Oh,
you can see that.
Right.
You know, if they're the last person in the parking lot, you know, they roll in 15 minutes late, half an hour late, or they're the first one out of the office, they're the one who leaves, you know, 10 minutes early every day. I mean, I've worked in places where I always had someone like that. You know, there's always someone who rolls in late. There's always someone who rolls out early, you know, and ultimately it's the manager's job to put a stop to that. If the manager tolerates that, you know, everybody is going to say, why does that person get that privilege? Why don't I get that privilege? And you're setting your organization up for failure, because people will, like you said, they'll grouse, they'll get mad, they'll be angry. And ultimately, I think they're angry at you as the manager for tolerating that, because ultimately it's you who decides whether to let that employee skate or not.
Exactly.
It's on you as a manager.
No, and that was my reaction. I mean, the guy and the girl who did this, I was like, what the heck is wrong with you? Y'all, you know what time you're supposed to be here. We're here. Yeah, and then I would look at the boss and go, oh, there's the problem right there. Because nobody is saying, you show up at time or let me know what the problem is and we'll work a different schedule for you or we'll fire you, but come on now. Okay, so in your book, you talk about the three things that anybody can do to be a better manager, no matter if it's normal or the new normal. So, you know, you're saying that every manager, whether they're new or established, can improve their performance and their effectiveness. And I think you said you had three ways. Can you share those?
Sure. You know, I think that one of the first things is to be optimistic. And, you know, these are, you know, everyone wants to work for someone who's positive. I want to work in a positive workplace. I want to, again, be happy about going into work. I want to be looking forward to going into work. I don't want to be the person who says, geez, I've got to go to work today. Oh, I got to get in my car and drive in. Do I really have to do this? Because it's the last thing I want to do. And I think a lot of that has to do with the optimism of the boss, of the manager. And is he or she being optimistic about, you know, the work we're doing, about the future we have as a business, about our customers, that we're doing really great things for our customers, and that we're, you know, really concerned about the welfare of our people, that we are positive, that we really do care about our people and about our customers and about the communities in which we do business and about, you know, making a difference in the world, because we all do want to work for a company that is doing good things, and we all do want to make a positive difference in the world around us. So I think that's one of the first things. It's probably the first thing that I'd say that any manager can do to be a better manager. You know, another thing I'd say is honesty, and this is so important. I've worked for people who, you know, managers who felt that they shouldn't tell their employees what's going on, that they should, you know, they're afraid that their employees are going to be upset to learn that maybe there's a financial downturn in the business, or maybe you've lost a big customer. I mean, I know that I've worked for companies where if we lost a big contract with a big customer, the manager was grappling with whether they should tell the employees or not. You know, maybe I shouldn't tell the employees because they'll get upset and then they won't work as well. They won't be as engaged in their job. But yeah, I personally think the opposite is true. I think you need to let your people know exactly what's going on. You need to be transparent. You need to let your people know if you lost a big contract, if a customer has decided to go elsewhere, to a competitor, and then talk about it and figure out why, you know, what happened. How could we do better in the future? How could we make sure we don't lose a customer like that again? Is it something we did? Is it something they did? Did our competitor offer them a better price, better service? Are we failing in some way? Are we falling down on the job? So I think honesty, transparency, you know, letting your people know what's going on is critically important. And this is especially true today in a situation like we have with this COVID virus, coronavirus, is that, you know, people need to know the truth. And again, communicating to them honestly, transparently what's going on and regularly, you know, it's more important than ever to let your people know what's going on and in their jobs and the world around them. That's another key thing. And I'd say the third thing, and we've already talked about this a bit, firing. I think people want to be inspired. They want to work for inspiring bosses, you know, for managers who and leaders who inspire them, who get them excited about the work they do, you know, who motivate them to do the best thing they can do, who are really concerned about them as individuals, and reward them, you know, call them out when they do something good, call them out when they do something right, you know, and say thank you. Just a simple thank you is one of the most powerful tools I think any manager has, is to just thank their people when they do something, and to do it just regularly. You don't have to wait for the annual review. You shouldn't wait. If you're waiting for the annual review to tell your people what a great job they're doing or what a bad job they're doing, you're failing as a manager. You need to be inspiring them and telling them all the time what a great job they're doing. Or if they're not doing a great job, letting them know that too and helping them do better. That's for sure. Those three things I'd say are critically important skills that any manager can do to become a better manager.
And you don't have to be, you know, overly effusive or fake. I mean, a thank you from the heart is easy to do. I don't know why more people don't do it.
I agree. It's
puzzling.
So easy.
It really is. It is. You know, you taught. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, and I was going to say about the thank you that, you know, writing thank you notes. I mean, people nowadays that, you know, now we have email, we have text, you know, text messaging, we have platforms like, Slack, I think, these communications platforms within companies, things
mm-hmm.
like Slack.
Trello, a lot of those.
Yeah, Trello, yeah. So those you can use in new ways too. I mean, why not use that as a tool to thank your employees? Why not just shoot them a quick message? You know, I really like what you did with this project. You know, thank you so much. And, you know, even a handwritten note. I mean, who writes handwritten notes anymore? But those are so cherished by employees. I mean, I've worked in places, and I know people who've worked in places that someone's wall or cubicle, you know, wall or whatever it might be, is covered with these handwritten thank you notes that someone took the time to write. I think it's an extra special gesture that a manager can make is to handwrite a thank you note. It doesn't have to be long. You don't have to get
right.
a card, you know, from the store. You could just write a quick and easy thank you so much for that the great work you did the other day. I really appreciate it. That's all you have to do.
And you know where you'll see those where people are really proud of them? Go to your veterinarian. They're going to have a billboard, you know, cork board behind their desk with all these thank you cards. I mean, my veterinarian has two cards from me because, you know, I had lost two cats and they took exquisite care of them. And every time I go in there, I see my cards. I can spot them. Yeah, and they thought enough of them to put them out there where they can see them. They're very important. Look, when I get a thank you card from either my guests who have been here or whoever it's from, I've got a box in my closet where all those cards live. They don't get tossed. They just don't. Unless they're a send-out card, I hate those things. I really do. It's like if you don't have the time to write me a really, you know,
right.
quick note, it's you kind of wasted a postage stamp with me on that one, but that's just me. What I wanted to ask you a bit ago is you taught MGT 453, Creativity and Innovation, as a lecturer at San Diego State University. And I absolutely know that we are going to see globally, locally, wherever it is that we're going to see huge strides in innovation and creativity. So let's talk about that a bit, because this is a time
sure,
for people, once they get sorted out and the panic has subsided a bit and you're like, okay, I've got this. Now you put your mind to, ooh, okay, we got this. Let's see what else we can do. What can we create? Where can we innovate? Where can we pivot? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because so many of us, I think, have had the creativity kind of beaten out of us over the years and the innovation. There's a great, I think it's the number one TED Talk of all time as far as how many people have actually watched it online. I think his name is Kenneth Robinson, or it's maybe Sir Ken Robinson. I don't know if he's got a sir in front of his name. He's an English guy, so he might have a sir in front, but it's Ken or Kenneth Robinson. And he did this TED Talk about how, you know, when we're a child, when we're young, we're just infinitely creative. We've got we're 100% creativity, you know, all the time. We're just amazed. The world is just, everything is possible. There's nothing that's impossible. Everything is, possibilities are boundless. But over time, you know, as we get into the school system, as we go through school, that creativity is kind of beaten out of us. So by the time we reach adulthood, our creativity is negligible. It's hardly there at all. So I think that's something that I think the best managers, the best leaders do is make it safe to be creative, is to encourage innovation and make it a safe place, make your business a safe place for people to come up with great ideas. And if you've empowered them, if you've given them, you know, the ability to do work on their own and to come up with these great ideas and then to put them into practice, you've really got an amazing place there that's innovative, creative, and your people are unleashed.
And
what a great place to work
in.
Who doesn't want to work in a place like that?
I know. You know, I don't want to work for anybody. I would work in a place like that. But the only thing that, and this popped into my head, because there's always going to be companies who will say, oh, well, you created that on our time. We own that. And I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. But this is probably not the time to be selfish, is my thinking. If somebody creates it, if they innovated it, let them run with it. May not be legal or illegal. I don't even know how that works. But sometimes you can't be greedy all the time, is my point.
Yeah. Well, I think you just want to open up that creativity. You don't want them to start worrying about where the line is. Like, where am I going to draw a line on my creativity?
Exactly.
You want people to give everything they've got to the job, to your organization. And if they're creating, that's, you know, and obviously you want them to be creating on your behalf. You don't want them taking what they create and starting a business half day, like they're going to do half of the day working on your stuff and half of the day creating for their own business, and you're paying for their full time. I mean, that's a whole other issue. But you want them to be unleashed. You want them to be creative and innovating all kinds of good things for your customers, you know, for your products, the services you deliver. And I wouldn't put constraints. It's definitely not a time to be putting boundaries on people, that's for sure.
Exactly. So when this poor manager, he doesn't even understand that he just walked into a big old pile of quicksand. You know, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and now he's got to learn something he doesn't know what he needs to know. So, I mean, I can see that a lot of new managers going, oh, my gosh, is there a course for this? There may well be when this is all done. I'll bet you some of this creativity and innovation we're talking about lands in some courses, you know, some leadership courses. Why wouldn't it? I mean, once you create something that really, really works and you're new and you found a way to just make something rock and roll, heck yeah, you need to teach it. So, you know, there's some innovation there too. So anybody listening, like, okay, go do your best, create something wonderful, and then teach it to other people. So I'm giving you free ideas
exactly.
here. Yeah, but why
exactly.
not? I mean, you know, when I first started out as a podcaster, you know, I was off in the woods. Nobody knew what it was, how we did it, and I just taught myself. Now I teach other people how to do it, but man, oh man, I had to, you know, fall, bump my head, get back up, say, oh, geez, that didn't work, and start all over again. I wouldn't have missed that for the world. I would not have missed that. It was just so much fun to do. Yeah, sometimes I was like, oh, I can't keep doing this. I'm not doing this right, but I wasn't doing it wrong either. So what the heck? I just kept
going.
Exactly.
That's great. That's a great story. Exactly. That's an ideal situation.
It really was. And, you know, now, of course, everybody and their grandmother's a podcaster, but, you know, some will make it and some won't, and God bless them all. But if you learn as you're going, and, you know, we're all learning right now, all of us, I would say jot it down, keep a diary, you know, keep notes, keep strong notes, and then teach other people what worked. You can only go from strength to strength, right? And if you go back into your diary, your journal, your notes, whatever it is, clear eye, you know, now that everything has kind of passed a bit, and go, oh, that was a boo-boo. Let's not do that one again. So you can start cleaning it out and making it cleaner, fresher for the next go around or teach somebody to do a better job.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really interesting point from what I just was thinking about is that many people who are managers work in teams of managers. So if your organization is large enough, you know, the larger the organization is, the more managers are going to be who are basically at the same level. So you might have, for example, I worked in an organization. I had 10 managers that were my peers. You know, we're all in charge of different departments. I was in charge of, say, operations, where I was in charge of the shipping and receiving and the building, the facilities, these different things. We had another manager who was in charge of HR. We had another manager who was in charge of IT, and all these different aspects of the business. So you've got a team of managers, and you should also be meeting with that team of managers and sharing, you know, your learning. So I'm a manager. I tried something out with my team. This worked great. I'm a manager. I tried this out with my team. This did not work at all. And you want to share those learnings with your other managers, the other managers on your own management team. So you should be having regular meetings too, and sharing that learning with them and learning what and hearing what they've found out, what they've learned, and we're all learning like crazy right now. We're in a whole different situation, and now more than ever, we need to be sharing our learning as managers with our other managers that we're that we work with.
I didn't even think about that, but and I don't mean this to sound at all uncaring or crass, but I find this a very exciting time. I do. I mean, just from this standpoint, not that people are sick, not that people are dying, God, no. But just the fact that we now can pivot and bring people closer together, I think people are getting closer, I find. It's interesting how people are pulling together, and I love that aspect of this. People are saying, look, we got this. We're not going to sit around and wait for the, Social Security kick in or, go on welfare or do whatever. We're not going to do that. I'm not selling the house. We're going to make this work. Okay, you over there, what have you got? Then you start brainstorming. You start in, one brain, two brains, three brains, all of a sudden you've got some really great ideas. One brain, not so much. But you start, team building and really talking together. All of a sudden at 3:18 in the morning you wake up and say, Billy Bob said that, ooh, that's a great idea. Let's see what we can do with that. That's what I mean. In some ways, I find this, tragic as it is, a very exciting time. And I hope people don't yell at me for that.
Yeah, and this is, I think, adversity brings out the best in people. I think when
that's
we're
what
in
I was
tough
trying
times,
to say. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's so true. I think that, it's not a good thing. People are dying. It's terrible. This is a real tragedy for our country and for the world. But adversity brings out the best in people, and it's going to make everyone stronger. It's going to make us stronger as people, in our relationships with those who we love and work with, and our families, our employees, our customers. I mean, I think it's going to build a much stronger, these bridges of trust, these relationships that we need to have in our lives and in our businesses. Our relationships are going to be much stronger as well, and better organizations as a result.
I agree. And that's what I was trying to pull out of my brain, and I couldn't, so thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was just, letting my mouth run, and my brain was saying, I don't think that's what you wanted to say. But you extrapolated it out for me. But that's exactly right. And, we do have this opportunity to really make good things happen. We really do. So let's do it. Well, Peter, is there anything else? We've only got about, 3 more minutes. That was fast. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to share with the audience before I let you go?
Oh, I think this is true in all the time, but I think in a time like we're going through right now, it's more important than ever for anyone in business and as a manager, a leader, or just, an employee, to be human, to be more human, to be as human as you possibly can be. I think in unprecedented times like we're going through right now, but in just normal times, we should be people. We should be, business is all about relationships. Business is all about people. We serve people. We work with people. We've got to be human. We've got to, look out for our coworkers. We've got to do the best we can by them. And to not treat them as objects, and not just treat them as just something to get something done. These are all people, and we've got to treat them that way. And I think that's, if I leave you with one thought and your audience with one thought, it's to be as human as you possibly can be, to have that empathy, to really look out for your fellow man and fellow woman, and make sure you're doing right by them now. And anytime, it's really critically important.
Exactly, and thank you for that. That was beautiful. Peter, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Well, my website is petereconomy.com, and economy is just like what it sounds like. It's the economy. So petereconomy.com has all my stuff. And it was great. Thank you, Denise. I had a real pleasure being here today with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure having you. And I remember asking you, if economy was your real name. I went, really? I had to ask. And so, but thank you so much. It's been wonderful speaking with you, and I really thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience. And I would like you to come back maybe in the fall, and we'll talk about the book, because things will be different then, and maybe we can, kind of pick up where we were here and say, okay, this is what, you know, we've kind of noticed. You know, we'd love to hear from, you know, our audience and see what changed for them. If you would, now you don't have to come back, but I did ask you on the radio, so you can't tell me no, right?
I would love to. No, I'd love to be back.
Okay,
it would be great.
It's a tricky way to do it. Well, listen, before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Get your voice.